Court will proceed to the sixth case, Jackson versus the United States. Ms. Riley.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, if the guidelines were advisory when Jackson was sentenced, as they are now, remand would be required in this case. If Booker were retroactive, remand under Palladino would be mandated in this case. In imposing sentence in 1998, the District Court stated that the career offender enhancement should not apply. This Court reversed, however, due to the fact that at the time the guidelines were mandatory. And so Mr. Jackson went back to the Indiana State Court and got them to do what they had originally intended, which was to reclassify his criminal recklessness conviction as a misdemeanor. And the difference is monumental. The original sentence imposed by the District Court was 97 months. However, due to the enhancement, Mr. Jackson received an additional 165 months. As of March 6th of this year, Mr. Jackson has served the entirety of his original 97-month sentence. However, he still faces an additional 13 years and 9 months if his sentence is not corrected to reflect what was originally intended by the Indiana State Court. In 1988, at the age of 16, Mr. Jackson pled guilty to criminal recklessness, a Class D felony, under the proviso that it would be reclassified as a misdemeanor upon the successful completion of probation. Although Mr. Jackson successfully completed probation, the criminal recklessness conviction was never reclassified as a misdemeanor. That conviction was used to apply the career offender enhancement in 1999. When Mr. Jackson realized that his criminal recklessness conviction had never been reclassified as a misdemeanor, he brought this to the attention of his counsel. However, his counsel stated that nothing could be done at the time until Mr. Jackson went back to the state court and had the conviction corrected. Mr. Jackson hired two attorneys in order to bring him some relief in the state court. However, he was forced to proceed pro se and was successful in May of 2004 when the Indiana State Court, in correcting his sentence, reclassified his criminal recklessness conviction as a misdemeanor. Under Indiana state law, a misdemeanor, by its definition, is not punishable for a term exceeding 1 year. Therefore, Mr. Jackson's criminal recklessness conviction can no longer be considered a felony under the United States sentencing guidelines. Because the Indiana State Court order establishes that Mr. Jackson no longer has the two prerequisite felony convictions necessary for its application, it shall no longer be applied. Since Congress chose to predicate the career offender enhancement on state court action, this court should respect the Indiana State Court order since the criminal recklessness conviction served as a basis for the enhancement. The reduction of the state sentence is clearly authorized by Indiana public policy. Indiana law provides a judge with the ability in circumstances that would ordinarily authorize the imposition of a Class D felony to instead convict under a Class A misdemeanor, and that misdemeanor cannot be used or considered a felony thereafter. Moreover, in 2003, the Indiana General Assembly took a further step by codifying the ability of a judge to convert a Class D felony to a Class A misdemeanor upon the fulfillment of certain conditions. Under federal law, a defendant has the right to petition for resentencing after successfully attacking a state sentence. Federal courts do not hold that a state must take a specific action, rather only that the action sufficiently impact the federal sentence. The state court's original intent was that this conviction would not be treated as a felony after the successful completion of Mr. Jackson's probation. This intent was effectuated in 2004 when the state court granted Mr. Jackson's motion to reclassify his conviction the same day it was filed. In accordance with the decision of the Indiana court, Jackson's criminal recklessness conviction should be treated as a misdemeanor. This court has jurisdiction to hear Mr. Jackson's claims. Pursuant to 18 U.S.C. 3742, a defendant may file a notice of appeal in district court for review of an otherwise final sentence if that sentence was imposed as a result of an incorrect application of the sentencing guidelines. Due to the reclassification of Mr. Jackson's criminal recklessness conviction, the career offender enhancement is now being erroneously applied. Thus, Mr. Jackson's claims fall within the textual language of Section 3742. However, if this court believes that Jackson's claim should be brought under Section 2255, jurisdiction is possible under this section as well. This court has the right to take the briefs in this case and treat them as a request for a certificate of appealability and certify to the district court. To certify a second and successive petition, petitioner must show that it has newly discovered evidence that would establish that no reasonable fact finder would have found movement guilty of the offense. Although the Indiana State Court order qualifies as newly discovered evidence, this court's decision in Hope versus United States construed the language in 2255 to mean that a petitioner can only bring a second and successive petition on the basis of newly discovered evidence if that evidence goes to conviction and not sentencing. This decision was based on the court's interpretation that the judge-made actual innocence exception did not survive the enactment of the AEDPA. Because Hope was one of the first decisions interpreting the AEDPA after its enactment, and because it has since confronted conflict with other sister circuits, it should be reconsidered. Habeas at its core is an equitable remedy and it serves as a bulwark to protect against unjust incarceration. Thus, prior to the enactment of the AEDPA, the judiciary crafted an exception called an actual innocence exception to provide a gateway for prisoners to bring claims that would otherwise be defaulted. Since the enactment of the AEDPA, many circuits believe that the actual innocence exception still applies and have applied that exception in capital and extended sentencing situations. These holdings are based on the concept that actual innocence is grounded on the fundamental availability of habeas review to correct an unjust sentence. These circuits have held that there is no reason to bar the application of actual innocence to sentencing, since whether there was an error made in the determination of guilt or an error was made in the determination of sentence, the result is still the same. The ultimate issue is the justice of the incarceration. A habeas inquiry should focus on whether or not a defendant is being illegally detained. Regardless of whether that detention is due to a charge of which the defendant is innocent or a sentence which is inapplicable, the result is the same. In both situations, an inmate is unjustly incarcerated and his freedom is unconstitutionally infringed upon. By eviscerating the ability to correct an illegal or unconstitutional sentence on a second or successive petition, the text of the AEDPA, as construed in Hope, would be tantamount to suspension of the writ. More immediate, the effect of Hope is that Mr. Jackson will be forced to serve 13 years and 9 months due to an enhancement that is no longer applicable. Thus, the situation at bar is the exact situation that the actual innocence exception was created for.
You ought to save yourself a little time for rebuttal.
I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal then. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Riley. Mr. Kapp?
Thank you, Your Honors. David Kapp for the government. At the onset, there's no question about this court's jurisdiction. The issue here is the district court's jurisdiction. Mr. Jackson is seeking here a third bite at the proverbial apple, Your Honors. His first bite was at sentencing and on direct appeal when the potential impact of the state felony in question was obvious to everyone. His second bite was on his 2255 petition when he articulated this issue but never really developed it. It was denied properly by the district court, and he never appealed. Now we come some 5 years post-federal sentencing and an action in the Indiana state courts is presented to this court as a reason to redo everything. And the fundamental problem is there is no vehicle that supplies the district court with jurisdiction unless this court issues a certificate of appealability under 2255, allowing a second 2255 petition.
We already have an order extant, though, that said it wasn't 2255, right?
I understand that minute order, Your Honor, and it seems to me that this request of theirs, regardless of how it's denominated, it that's where it fits in that 2255. I don't know what else you would call it. My reading of the motion order is that we were directed to appeal or to brief this to, you know, to flush this issue out and understand precisely what we have. Certainly, initially, Mr. Jackson was saying it's not a 2255. My reading of the motion order was, you know, the appellant's suggesting it's not a 2255. It may not be, but let's get it fully briefed. Now they're arguing, I believe, that it is in fact a 2255. They should get a certificate of appeal from this court, or they should get relief from the second 2255 prohibition under the inadequate or ineffective savings clause of 2255. And again, there is simply no vehicle that I can see, Your Honors, that gives the district court jurisdiction to entertain this claim. This does not qualify for a second successive prosecution, or excuse me, 2255. The language of the statute is clear. The Hope case is clear. What 2255 is designed to do, as this court said in the Davenport case, is it gives a reasonable opportunity to obtain a reliable judicial determination of the fundamental legality of the sentence. And as the petitioner Davenport, he had an opportunity on direct appeal and an opportunity on his first 2255 to do exactly that. And those opportunities were not taken, and Congress has made it clear that the successive attempts to challenge sentences needs to come to a stop, and where it comes to a stop is after the second bite of the apple, and that's been taken here. So I don't believe that we get to the merits of what the state court did or did not do, because there's simply no jurisdictional vehicle to get there. I will add in closing, though, a few observations on the merits. There is no question that he pled guilty to a felony in the Indiana state courts, and, very important, a felony sentence was imposed. He was sentenced to 2 years in the Indiana Department of Corrections, which under any definition of felony I know, that is a felony sentence. That sentence was suspended upon service of 2 years probation, also a felony sentence. So Mr. Jackson pled guilty to a felony and served a felony sentence. 18 years later, an Indiana court reclassified it or modified it to a Class A misdemeanor. Disagree with my opponents here. That was not the clear original intent of the Indiana court. That was an agreement between the state and the defendant in Indiana, but that agreement did not include the court. In fact, the state and the defendant's original agreement to the court was a one-year probation, a misdemeanor probation. The Indiana court rejected that and imposed a felony sentence. So for purposes of the guidelines, under 4B1.1, under 4A2.1, and the relevant application notes, this sentence and conviction in the Elkhart Superior Court was, and for guidelines purposes, remains a felony. There's no further questions. That concludes my remarks.
Right, thank you, Mr. Kapp. Ms. Riley.
Your Honors, in Jackson's first 2255 petition, he asked the district court to stay in order that he proceed in state court and have his conviction reclassified. However, that stay was denied. Mr. Jackson has yet to have the opportunity to challenge the application of his enhancement. This court has the ability to treat the briefs in this case as a certificate for appealability and certify to the district court. If Mr. Jackson's sentence is not corrected, he is faced with an additional 13 years and 9 months for an enhancement that is no longer applicable. For the reasons stated, this court must remand for resentencing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Riley. Thanks to all counsel. Ms. Riley and Mr. Starkman, an additional thanks for taking this appointment and so ably representing Mr. Jackson. Court will stand in recess. The case is taken under advisement.